And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And Friday night, I put it to you, Andy, that it's slightly less frustrating to get a draw when you're the one who snatches the late goal.
Totally. This is an absolutely classic game where the order of scoring matters a lot.
Yeah. Which is good, because there was very little scoring in the first half.
It was indeed, and you know, this is, for different reasons, this in many ways, this game was triggering for both of us. But the look, overall, I was really, even in the first half when we were losing, I was just even in the first quarter, I was really impressed with the pressure. Like, it felt like a Richmond game. That's right. So in many ways, the team was on. It was a traditional game, a Richmond game. Maybe
scrappy as round one often is.
Yes, but we were generating shots. We were generating chances with our pressures. Maybe it was always planned this way. Maybe they reacted pretty strongly to the Melbourne game. I suspect maybe a bit of the latter, considering how hard they reacted. But, you know, at the selection table, they leaned really hard into pressure players. Some slightly surprising. Some, if we'd known Graham was as fit as he was, we would have probably talked about him more positive. But, you know, also brought in Marlon and Mansell and a sort of reprising the George role. So we leaned in heavily in the pressure, and mostly it worked. And it was just,
I was surprised when I looked at the stats and Pickett only had 10 disposals, because he just seemed back to, I mean, he got subbed off for the last quarter, but
Well, have you looked at the quarter by quarter background?
No.
He had 8 in the first quarter and then 1 in the next. So one could that one doesn't look so good in hindsight, because he looked amazing, but he clearly was not fit enough for the game. I was so pleased to have him back in. That mark he took in the first, where in the defensive, sort of just at the edge of the defensive goal square, where he turned his body to avoid the contact, but still took the mark. God, I love him. He's such a brilliant, old school, clever footballer. But he didn't have the legs for the game in the end.
No, that was a bit. Jack Graham did. He worked really hard, you know, a little rusty with his finishing, particularly early on. But
that'll happen. But I thought he was great.
Yeah,
overall, and I was sort of vintage Jap Graham, and actually he's played very well against Carlton in the past too. But so he was up for it, but Pickett was not. But overall, the net effect on the team was, I thought the pressure was really high. It looked really good. And, you know, not to go any further, on the expected shots, it was a 3-4 goal win, depending on which measure.
Oh, my God.
Plus 22 on the inside 50s.
We're doing this again.
We are doing this again. But, you know, the order of the kicking. But even after the game, sort of the way the coaches talked, Foss was very, actually, magnanimous in the game. Dimmer wasn't bad, but Dimmer was more, we gave away 2 points, and Voss was, let's take the positives from this. And, you know, and this was pointed out on a footy show brought up to us by Sean Ross, but at that last bounce when the scores were tied, Baker left his man and ran through the centre before the outcome of the bounce was known. And we also played Bolter in the centre square. We did not play defensively. We were playing for 4 points. We weren't playing for 2, which is, by the way, the right strategy. But, interesting. Everything it does, it was much, much better as a fan than the loss, but it was definitely, but it felt more like two. If you forget about that we kicked that last brilliant goal, I think it's more 2 points lost than 2 points gained. But it's 23 game season as a ceiling mechanism. At least we look good.
I thought it was somehow less than the sum of our parts. Like the pressure was good. I thought Lynch ended up having the better of Wietering. Dusty was dangerous most of the night. We beat, you know, Carlton are one of the genuinely good contested possession teams, and we beat them at clearance. You know, there was a lot of there was a lot of things that went right for us. Obviously not free kicks, but this forward line filled with exciting players, and God, we had long periods of time in the first half and big chunks of the last quarter as well, where we were getting the ball inside 50. Now, and not converting. Now, part of that, I thought Carlton had a very defensive mindset for much of the night in terms of putting people.
Well, that's part of how they play. They fold back a lot, so that, you know, they're inviting the kick inside 50 and hoping to rebound from there. But yeah, go on. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, there's an element of trying not to lose as well. And, you know, relying on the fact that, they're going to be able to jag enough goals because of the high-profile key forwards. I think Dan Rioli getting 5 votes each from the coaches in the coaches' awards was a pretty easy decision. Yeah. I know.
I thought the change in the game was, it was almost two games, and that moment early in the it was when Dan Rioli started getting off the chain was when the game shifted, and it was that moment where he gathered up the loose ball off that bad neck centre and then broke the line and kicked it to Bolton. That was the change in the game almost, and it became a scoring rate, became a more normal game after that, at least until things tightened up again in the fourth quarter. But that little burst is what got better back into the game.
Yeah, and we had a period of dominance out of the middle as well in that third quarter. It was a very Richmondy burst.
Yeah, but to the point on Rioli, almost 700 metres gained, and really, there weren't a lot of
massive,
doubt. Yeah,
that's a massive
because short. Yeah, and especially in Rioli, because he doesn't do the long dump kicks like Short does. That sort of builds up Short's numbers. Most of those Rioli's kicks were running hard with the ball and then hitting targets.
Mm.
Went at 93% to make the point.
Yeah, which is pretty impressive. Dusty had 8 inside 50s. I thought he looked pretty good.
Yeah, on the comment, I don't know if it was when the Fox switched or whether it was on this Channel 7 commentary, but the very first thing they, just before the game started, they point out that McGovern was on Dusty. And then the very first thing that happened was McGovern dropped a mark and Dusty kicked a goal. Which amazingly the commentators didn't refer to because they were too busy making under 14 tactics remarks. Sorry, that was unnecessarily harsh. But, the Dusty looked good. And one thing I really liked about Dusty's game was there's about once a game where in peak Dusty where I'd always think, you could have run a little bit harder there. You know, Dusty was clearly conserving his energy on the defensive side. He was okay defensively. Like, he wasn't noticeably – there was no moment I saw where he was noticeably saving his energy. And that's pretty good for Dusty. And that, to me, that gave me real hope as well. That was one of the positives for me, is that Dusty's adjusting to his game. Because Dusty's not supernova offensively anymore. He needs to play a bit more in team structure and do those things. And to me, based on one game, he is sort of making that shift a little bit. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I was impressed with Dusty's overall game.
No. He looked fit and dangerous, I thought. Speaking of it, well, I thought it was a pretty good night for the older brigade in general. Jack had four contested marks, and his pressure numbers were right up.
5 tackles. There's been sort of a bit of grumbling because Young sort of 14 intercepts. Some of those came off Jack. So there were a few times Jack could have contested a bit better. But, he kicked a really big goal. And he definitely had his moments.
He did. He didn't get loose on the lead all that much, if you were going to criticise. But,
who did?
Yeah. Four contested marks is a lot. Actually, I thought Jack Graham presenting on the lead was pretty effective on the night. Trent Cotchin's game was a victory for those of us who said he'd play as a midfielder and not as a forward.
Yeah, well, it was the best possible outcome, I think. Well, I mean, the best possible outcome was that he goes forward and becomes an All-Australian, obviously, but the realistic option of that being something to freshen him up during the preseason, and maybe they'll use it a bit during the season when they want a shock. But yeah, if you looked at his heat map, and credit to Simon Wallace, I believe, tweeted this. It was pure. He had the equal lowest time on ground in the 60s, and we basically used him as the sort of fifth mid, as discussed preseason in our podcast.
Yeah, because you inside midfield is an extremely physically demanding position. You rotate quite a few guys through. So
and you know what his stat profile was quite like, Nick? It was quite like Selwood's last year. Anyway, go on.
There we go. I have a new favourite Morris Rioli Jr. thing.
That's going to be a long list because, like, he is deservedly an absolute fan favourite.
Yeah. It's where, and this only works if you're watching on the television, but if you just catch a glimpse of him out of the corner of your eye lurking behind someone who's about to take a kick, and then as soon as the umpire yells, play on, he dashes forward them and lays them out from behind. And he did it to both Mackay and Wietering in the third quarter, and it was great. I loved it.
There was definitely a moment, I wish I'd written down the Carlton player's name, but he rushed because, like, Dimmer's obsessed with turning hard-nut back pockets into forward pockets. I don't know why, but Rioli has the thing that AFL players really scares them, is he can surprise them by running them down with his burst.
Mm.
Yep. There were a few times, and that's what people fear, not that the fact that you're a bit of a bastard. A few times I thought Carlton players shanked kicks because they thought Rioli was closer than he was.
Mm. Well, speaking of Mansell, I thought his defensive work was good. Like, he was really diligent manning up, as you expect. And occasionally he presented well, including most notably in that last passage of play. But he just doesn't make himself dangerous by reading where the contest is going to. And yeah,
I don't want to be harsh on a guy we both like, and he's from Tasmania. So soft spot on the podcast.
Yeah.
But it's not like players like that just aren't going to have gravity. And when players don't have gravity, the other team knows that.
That would matter less if he was getting to that really dangerous spot at Jack or Lynch's feet regularly.
He
being
did have
that one step ahead.
Yeah, and you've got to be clean, and I don't think that it's just not a gene he has. And there was a chase late in the game when he didn't have that much game time. He was equal with Cotchin as least game time, and he didn't have that extra. George would have mown them down, and he didn't. So
you say that he was the fastest. On tracking, he was the fastest Richmond player on the night.
Okay, but he just doesn't have the burst. Like, Rioli sometimes just has the burst. I don't know, it's hard to say, but we'll see. Dimmer can be pretty stubborn about these moves, as discussed long on the podcast, but I can't help it.
He was quite defensive about it in the post-match press conference. But
Well... Because it is very much a not all the coaching staff have been here, but this is a trope of Dimmer's coaching. And as I've said to you offline and probably on this podcast, he's the greatest coach we ever have. But actually, someone who barracked for another team made this good someone's been coaching you for a long time, even when they're brilliant, you get to know all their flaws.
Yeah, that's quite true.
And their pet things, so that they that it annoys you over time. But you know, it's always important to keep the wood for the trees. But that's more than time. And if the Mansell thing comes over, I'll probably spend you nuts sending you nuts complaining about it. So let's move on to happier topics. And Nick, I think we've gone long enough without mentioning that, like, that was great from Taranto.
Yes. Actually, when you said we've gone long enough, actually, I've got three different things that I thought you might have said at that point, which is a good sign. Yeah, Nank.
Or Lynch.
Nank. Nank and the backline.
Oh, okay. You normally talk about backline structures, so I would have left that to you.
We'll get to it, but it's a good one. Yeah.
Charlie Cameron wasn't quite the best player in the AFL.
He never is versus Richmond. Kick a couple of annoying goals there. Tim Taranto was absolutely what was on the box from preseason. You know, covered a ton of ground, worked hard defensively, won clearances, was occasionally a bit scrappy with his disposal. Like, yeah, it's that we're going to have that challenge again of talking about somebody who's a very good but not a great player. But he's the Richmond jumper suited him, the MCG suited him, the scenes after the match with his grandparents were just lovely. Yeah, it was a really good debut.
Look, 5 clearances is, like, it's just above his career average. And when you get 500 metres gained, his kicking efficiency wasn't great, as you mentioned. But, like, his contested work was even slightly better than I expected. You know, the sort of, he has that, he's described as an accumulator sometimes, and I don't see that as a bad thing. But, you know, I thought he was genuinely inside out.
He relentlessly makes contests.
Played 80% game time, which is a huge shift for a guy of his position. And Nick, I approve of the fact that he never uses his wrong foot.
No. No, he doesn't. There's some pretty scrubby kicks as a result, but yeah.
Yeah. But, like, you know, one of his best kicks was that one of Jack's best marks was off the sort of a banana kick he kicked from a scrappy clearance. But the point is, he's got enough hoof on those kicks to at least get them, like, the deeper the entry, the better were those scrap kicks out of the midfield because the less likely it is to be rebounded. And yeah, he gets some decent purchase on it.
Yeah, no, it was a really good game. It wasn't as good a game for Hopper, although I did think the two of them had noticeable chemistry together, I thought.
Actually, I had that note too. I thought Hopper's best moment, other than the kick to Lynch at the end, was clever little hand passes to Taranto. I'm keeping a watching brief on the Hopper situation. I don't want to go early on it, but I'm a bit worried, but we'll see.
Really? I think you're at risk of distinctly going early.
Well, I'm not going early. That's what I just said. I did.
There was a bit of tone there. One clearance is a concern.
I did watch almost all these clearances twice to pick out positive things for the pod. Yeah, and I'm not saying them now because I couldn't find them.
No, but he had Taranto at his best. His best season. In 2021, average 400 meters gained per game, which was his number.
Yeah, look, the 2021 stats, we get that, will be for 4 or 5 years, will be ecstatic, but we just got to get that back.
But that's what I'm saying. He covered the ground like he did when he was playing well. He had 6 inside 50s, which is a pretty big number for him and pretty much anyone. And he ran out the game and had more pressure acts than anybody else on the ground in the last quarter. The weakest part of his game was his one wood, which is the clearance game. So all the sort of running, running pressure, covering the ground parts of his game, which have sometimes been a criticism, were actually pretty good. So if you is the question is he healthy? Yeah, hell, he looks in pretty good shape. I think it would be more of a concern if he was only winning inside ball and not doing any of the other things.
Interestingly, we didn't play him as the sort of he was sort of in the second string of the centre square rotation. That makes sense. So his numbers, I don't have them in front of me, but like Prestia, for instance, attended far more contests than he did. So whatever that means for the future. Look, we'll see. There's plenty more weeks in the season to go.
Mm. Yeah, I just think the number people are overreacting a bit. I think there was plenty. Yeah, I think there was plenty to like.
I haven't noticed much online criticism. Like most fans I know are still pretty high on them.
Yeah, there's a bit out there. And look, 18 disposals superficially isn't enough. He's averages 22 for his career and has several seasons over 25. So yeah, he can definitely get better. But question one, is he fit and covering the ground? Yeah, he is. So that's for a guy who had knee injuries last year, that's a very good sign.
I'm okay. All right. Well, let's just go for more games because I think. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, you're not. I'm getting tired with being the only one bringing evidence. Right.
Well, look. To be honest, I looked at his centre square look, and I thought he looked flat-footed and unexplosive.
Mm.
And that, like I said, I watched everyone, and that doesn't mean he won't be in future game, but it's only one game. And on the pressure points, he had less than 30, which is pretty bad for a guy who's in around the contest. Whereas, like the other inside mids, we know Graham gets.
We've got to start looking at the same pressure stats because he's our second best player on the AFL pressure stats.
Well, the pressure points, which is slightly bigger metric, which he gets a higher number. Toronto got 68, and he got in the 29. So, look, they're numbers too. Okay, they're different numbers, but I'm just saying I'm reserving judgment. But I'm just saying that I really want him to be good. Before we recruited them, I wanted him more than Taranto because I thought he was a bigger need, and it hasn't happened yet. But doesn't mean it won't happen.
I came around on Taranto more, and we gave up more for Taranto. So I think that's instructive.
Yeah. I wanted them both. I was just. I wanted both. Hopper's the kind of player I love. I love inside hard nut inside midfielders. So that's why I'm kind of excited by him in principle, but also watching his game very closely. But, you know, he's also a kind of guy who'll be better on the wetter the day, the heavier the day. When the grounds get heavier during the year, I expect him to be better and better. And look, he's the kind of guy who might now go get 10 clearances against Adelaide. We win the clearances by 10. The clearances from the centre square is the reason we beat Adelaide. Like, it's one game.
Mm.
Okay, now that's far too long on one person's one game, and especially when it's not a positive. One of us is mildly positive and one of us is mildly negative. Bolton had almost 600 metres gained off 18 possessions.
Yeah, and yet it was frustrating.
Oh, the goal kicking or something else?
Yeah, the goal kicking, the finishing. And the dumb 50, because he's done so many dumb 50s.
When I watched that again, like it wasn't too bad live, but then I watched it on the replay, and it was just like you're talking about when he pretended not to know who to give it back to. Yeah, it was pretty obvious.
Yeah, look, I did appreciate that the umpires weren't particularly hot on 50-metre penalties, so we got fewer dumb ones than we have in previous
seasons. Except we should have got the first one when they threw it back to the wrong player. That is a 50 every day of the week.
That was a 50. And we lost the free kick count, and I thought they missed a blatant deliberate out-of-bounds with about 90 seconds to go.
and Miller getting bumped out of the contest. So, yeah, look, it was. If we were normal fans, we'd probably be complaining. Like, if we were fans of any other club, we'd probably complain about them more, but we're kind of used to this.
Except the passing whinge. Nank was great.
He was 11, sorry, you go.
11 tackles, 37 hit-outs, and, yeah, look, I didn't mind Miller's game as a sort of jack of all trades, notwithstanding his terrible shot at goal. But yeah, when Carlton got a couple of goals in the third quarter, partly just because Miller wasn't nearly as physical a presence to deal with dropping back into defensive 50. Like, De Koenig pushed hard to make himself a target, which he wasn't doing against Nank, because God knows the last thing they would want is for Nank to anchor himself at the front of the pack. Because, you know, you're not, nobody comes over the top of him.
Yeah, and there was a moment when Mackay made him look like a child, but Mackay does that to Bolter occasionally too, so, you know.
Miller held up on Kurnow one-on-one, which I was quite surprised with, and actually kept a running tally of how often it happened. And yeah, he had three one-on-one wins versus Kurnow.
There was actually a moment
which was no joke.
Sorry, he had three hit-outs to advantage, and one of his center square taps was legit lovely.
And he got three clearances as well.
There's stuff there, and like especially because they didn't play Pisonnet, he continues. No.
If we'd had Soldo, it would have almost been overkill.
Yeah, no, it would have been, because we dominated the rucks. It was 44-26. Like, why do you need?
Mm.
Like, if you're going to get that, you're going to play Miller any day. Mm. There was a moment running in a centre break where Dusty had an eye and he could have kicked straight, and he did a forward hand pass to Miller instead. And I thought that was really interesting. Like, you know, that's a
sign of confidence. He knows his name.
Anyway, so it was. Yeah, it was interesting. But back to Nank, like the pressure was, we're going to have to agree. But according to the Herald Sun measure, which was the pressure points, Nank was actually our game leader and had.
He was in the AFL ones as well.
Okay, so there's some correlation, but which is good, right? But yeah, you could see it the eye test too. You know, just he was Nank at his best, which I thought last year was Nank's best season, at least pre re-injuring his knee. And that supreme pressure is where Nank, I think this sort of, to me, it's almost a next level for Nank, and it was back to that good form of last year, which is just, it's very hard to beat.
Yeah.
Not very hard to beat. It's incredibly valuable.
Yeah, no, he was really good. I thought he made De Koenig maybe not look bad, but yeah.
De Koenig had his moments, but yeah. He was clearly a key factor in the reason we won the clearances.
Hmm.
Not necessarily just because of his ruck work, but because of his follow-up work.
I was gonna mention what I said before. So our defence gave up five marks inside 50 all game to a team with two of the best six marks inside 50 players in the league last year.
Yeah, like it's, you know, that running back moment where Grimes spoiled Cunro.
Mm.
Anyway, he spoiled Kurnow, and it's sort of like, okay, Grimes might not always be down to mark against the smalls anymore, but, you know, in that situation, it's pretty hard. You know, he must be one of the goats in that situation, right?
Yeah. I was immediately, I think almost the first contest Grimes had, he just worked his way to the front of the contest and spoiled it. I was like, yep, no, that's reassuring.
Yeah, no, the whole team and Broad looked really good. The whole team defence and Rioli, we've already talked about, worked really well. Interestingly, Short wasn't sort of, you know, he was fine, but he wasn't. He was sub 20 possessions, and his meters gains was just sort of normal human levels, which is sort of a bit from last year. But when Rioli's playing like that, who cares?
Yeah, no, he was great. Yeah, I mean, Short was one of a number of players who came in a bit under a cloud, so maybe that had something to do with it. But yeah, and Prestia and then Coriel equal second best player on coaches' votes.
Yeah, I was like I thought he was good. And he, as I mentioned, he was our primary centre square player, along with Nank. But yeah, look, it was just pleasing he got through the game, right?
Yeah, no, it was good.
I have to mention the sub, and I really like Jack Ross, and I was slightly disappointed he wasn't more impactful.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. We kicked 1-4 from our first 8 shots at goal.
Yeah, I mean it was frustrating, right? And we had some, like, you know, Jack Graham. He's, you know, he's not the everything man, but you expect him to do the medium hard things perfectly. And yeah, anyway, it was frustrating.
Yeah, and I do. Maybe that's the upside. Yeah, Jack Graham, well above average shot at goal for his career, except for last night. Oh, except for Friday night. Anyone else you wanted to mention?
No, we pretty much mentioned them all, actually, in very Richmond Tiger Talk style, and had an overly long debate about Hopper. But yeah, the one. Toronto looks really exciting to me.
Yeah.
Like, as you said, you know, maybe not his disposal will never mean he'll be an all-star, but, like, it's just such a huge addition to our midfield, that kind of player.
If
he continues producing at roughly that level, because he's inside out and he links up so well.
He looks
every bit the second pick in the draft.
Yeah. And once he gets that connection with the other, with his teammates as well, I think that'll get him here. I did have the thought him and Adam Chera were traded for almost exactly the same value of draft pick, and yeah, I'd rather Toronto.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talked about Chera last week, but
who's decent?
Yeah, but he's always like this, right? He always is about the fourth, like. He's okay and he accumulates and he's fine. And, you know, he won the clearance, the last clearance of the game. So it was a bit of luck, but, you know, he did. And so it could have been impactful, but he's never, it was the same when he was at Fremantle. There was always a, you know, you never watched the Fremantle game and said, that was the mid I wanted. That's the best midfielder. And most mids have a game where you think they're the best midfielder of the group, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No. Brayshaw was definitely the only one. Well, the one that I always thought was the best there.
Also from Cripps, obviously, but yeah.
I don't think we had any injuries from the game.
No, and that's another really pleasing thing from it.
Mm.
And I mean, Pickett will hopefully be better for the run, and so there's a lot to be, and Lynch presumably will be better for the run. Dimas said we expected him to work into it, and he did kick 3 goals and the winner, but the tire. But you know, it's still sort of somewhat understandable if he had ring rust.
Which
I think good transition to the VFL.
Well, in terms of where it was the last practice game, so. Honestly, you don't get all that much from the club reports, other than the C being angry. But apparently, Sonzi, sort of some of the usual suspects. Sonzi, Judson Clark, played well. Dow was our best midfielder. Samson Ryan was good. Pretty much who you'd expect.
I think sort of the comment was Sonzi was good in flashes, but didn't, like, it's hard to know with these things, even when you're watching live. But yeah, that perhaps, you know, still a few weeks away. But Ryan and Dow and Judd looked ready to go, which is probably what you'd expect before the game, right?
Yeah, but good to see nonetheless.
I love Thompson Dow, so, and I love Judd, and I love Ryan, so, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I think they're playing the Bullets this weekend, which should be a win. The Tyler Young unfoot went off injured, which does mean we are starting to run very short on key defenders.
Yeah. Well, we've still got Biggie, though, so there's something
there. Yeah, still got Biggie, but that's it.
Biggie and Miller is a rolling back, so yeah. Podjack in there.
So
Bolter didn't have a possession in the last quarter, by the way.
No. So before we talk about the Crows, just finishing off a mildly eventful FLW trade period. So we traded for Courtney Jones, which we talked about on the last show, so pretty happy with that. And then finished off trade period by trading for Molly Eastman, who's a sort of defender / midfielder who was at Sydney last year, has spent some time with the North Melbourne's VFLW program, which has been a very good team. Honestly, I almost found it more interesting that she's a first-year PhD student, continuing the theme of our AFLW players, because they're not full-time professional athletes. They have far more interesting lives.
Yeah, and I agreed. That was a good stat. But yeah, like, I think the key thing is, and you've said this before, so it's not in insight, we didn't lose anyone that important to the last year's team. Although I didn't mind.
She was decent. And Harriet Cordner was all Australian in 2021. But yeah, I think when you see what's happened to some other clubs, we've got out of it pretty lightly.
Yeah, and like they haven't played that many games, right? So it's like it'd be nice to see the 22 team again, because it was a fun team, and it'd be nice to see if it's repeatable.
Well, and unfortunately they have to replace Courtney Wakefield, but with Greiser and Jones, I feel like they've actually upgraded the goal kicking power of the team. It could have been a lot worse.
Exactly. Adelaide.
Yeah. So we are only mild favourites for this game. 5.5 points last time I checked. I think that's partly the Adelaide. It's at Adelaide, obviously, but partly that terrible game we played against them last year, we single-handedly resurrected Taylor Walker's career. Because, they're a decent team at home. They're not all that good away from home.
That I watched for my sins. I watched that GWS game to research this pod. I thought they were horrendous. Give them the excuse that it was 35 degrees, but it was that hot for both teams. The Giants had so many injuries. They finished the game. They had three, so they finished the game two down on the bench.
Including some of their best players, like Kelly.
Whitfield.
Whitfield, Even Perryman's no joke.
And they just wilted from about halfway through the third quarter. It was honestly horrendous. The Giants were just all over them, and the Giants had all the they got very high picks who no one's ever heard of, just ripping off the halfback line and looking amazing.
Finn Callahan.
Yep. But they're still, as you point out, they're still relying on Hogan to kick a hell of a lot of their goals. Their forward line they looked terrible. But the whole game was defined by Riscatelli. Rankin.
Rankin. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Who?
Rischelli had 11 shots of goal between them.
Yeah, they were just everywhere. Rankin kept missing, but that's the worry. So who do you think is going to play on him?
Yeah, it's a good question. He's small. He's 181 centimeters. He's fast. Elusive.
He just knows how to find the space.
Yeah.
He's got superb football IQ.
I know. I don't know. It's tricky. He didn't play against us last year in that dreadful game that we've sponged from our memories. I think Dan Rioli's. I don't know. Do you play Dan Rioli? I mean, you risk losing some run, but you need the athleticism.
Yeah, and the advantage of that is you take him on, but you make him run too,
because
he's dangerous enough to be credible. Like, you can't let Rioli go free; you have to chase him.
No. So it does look. I like they have now. They're well into. It's about 5 years into. The rebuild they never expected from the dynasty they never got. But they're sort of Rischelli and Rankin are almost it in terms of their star talent. Notwithstanding the occasional moment from Darcy Fogarty, but yeah, they're the focus. They're too having Tex Walker. Well, last year it was Tex Walker and Elliot Himmelberg who really troubled us. Since then Darcy Fogarty's become more of an issue. But they're all big boys, and that is a bit of a concern for us at the moment. Because Ben Miller was part of why the Crows. Key forwards looked good last year, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is a worry. And how do you see bloody Keys is annoyingly good too, and was terrible. Was good against us last week,
They did get beaten up around the contest by the Giants. Oh, actually, no. The clearances
35-33 hit outs. They won the hit outs too, which is
Riley O'Brien always plays against well. Yeah, the GWS had 18 more contested possessions. That's what I was thinking of. Quite a few more disposals. Full stop.
We won the contested possessions against Carlton last week, which. Also, we had that great game against them in the middle of the year last year. It was very rare for us to do on against a good team, which I think we can say Carlton are. Look, it's a new look Richmond team, and I think we're bigger than 5-point favourites, frankly.
Yeah.
Sorry to go against the vibe of this podcast of nervousness, but
yeah. Well, yeah, it is a workmanlike midfield. Like that is one area where they are a bit in transition. Like Jake Soligo, Harry Sharp, Sharon Berg. You mentioned Keyes has been good for a while. I mean, I've still got Laird and Sloan running around, but yeah, it's not a gun forward line. Oh, sorry, gun midfield. I mean, O'Brien unfortunately does tend to get the better of Nank, but yeah.
Yeah, I hope, like, you shouldn't, right? They're quite similar in many ways.
Mm.
So he's bigger, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can't feel like partly it wasn't their fault. Like, you know, they lost the top 10 draft pick because he just decided to retire from football. But you can't, oh God, this is just tempting fate, isn't it? But you can't kind of help but feel that they've stuffed their rebuild.
playing in not being picked last week when he was another one sort of prize asset of the rebuild. Now he's a young key position forward, and they do take a while. So yeah, it is they're still very much a team in transition.
By the way, Nick, of the top four contested possession gainers against the Giants, all four of them were Giants, and Kelly got more, even though he got subbed out in the third quarter, than the best Crow.
Yeah, so you think there's an opportunity there. And, like, the Crows have a number of workmanlike rather than elite defenders, I think it's fair to say. Butts, Murray had an embarrassing, you know, I like to go through teams and sort of check out who's playing well and where they're lining up. And Mitchell Hinge, I was like, oh, I haven't really heard much of him before. How long do you reckon he's been in the AFL?
Well, I'm not going to – I've got the team sheet right in front of me, so I'm not going to check, but, oh, I don't know, what is it, 5 years?
Yeah. He got drafted 7 years ago by the Lions. So he had 4 years at the Lions and now 3 years at the Crows, and he's played 22 games in total.
Yeah.
And he's not a ruckman.
Yeah, God.
So, we should, notwithstanding it's in Adelaide, and they do, you know, they do have the probably two best young mid-sized forwards in the competition. But yeah, notwithstanding, feels like it's a really
good opportunity. It's going to be 26 on Saturday. It's a Sunday afternoon game. They are now heat conditioned. But we have
so it was pretty warm Thursday night as well.
Yeah, and but I was going to say they're coming off a 6 day break. We're coming off a 9 day break. Yes.
Yeah.
So it really feels like we should win this.
I know. I'm cursing myself for my complacency and confidence.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Well, on that note, we're both looking forward to discussing Hopper's 10 clearance game next week, where I can lovingly describe how he got one over.
First of the ball every time.
He destroyed Rory Sloan barely gets us in a clearance anymore. Gets us in a rotation anymore. But yeah, But look, I'm looking forward. And the week after, of course, we're playing Collingwood on Friday night. It's their home game, sadly. But
that'll be a mammoth game.
Yeah, I mean, Pies did look good.
Yeah. Oh, I stay. You could every round one. The team with the biggest round one winning streak coming into Last week was Hawthorn, had won 5 round one games in a row.
Well, that record got spectacularly
Yeah, it did. Oh, yeah, they're now 5 years into the rebuild, and only after 5 years are committing to a hard rebuild.
Yeah, I know we've had this discussion and we should wrap up the podcast, but just over and over again, like this discourse about rebuilds and like whether you should trade out your good players and things like that. Like if you're doing it in American sport, you've got 31 other teams or 29 other teams, depending on the league, to trade your old players to. You've got way more functional free agent market. The player you're drafting older players to in the
game. Yeah, who are going to come in and contribute? Like AFL is a lot more like the NBA, where other than a few players right at the top of the draft, you can get teams like Sacramento who, you know, are just mediocre for decades.
All three are good this year. Charlotte would be another one.
Finally. Yeah, all but right. all those, in the absence of a good culture, the high draft picks alone aren't enough to help. But yeah. Unfortunately, I did just check and we only played the Hawks once this year. Same to say.
They'll probably be variable during the year, but yeah, I'm just enjoying the Essendon, you know, just to pump that bubble up.
Yeah. It's a big game.
It is a big game, actually. It's a really big game for the suit. We've got to start racking up the W's. So it is a big, important game. And as you brought up, we owe them we will forever be the overdog in this conversation until they upset us in a big final. But in recent years, we kind of owe them at the Adelaide Oval. So yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, they've got we destroyed their team, and they've got micro revenge. I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Tigers.